Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Day 2 of COP29 is underway in Azerbaijan. World leaders are coming together to discuss the major issues impacting climate change. And yesterday, Mukhtar Babayev was elected president of this year's COP. He's a former oil executive who spent 26 years at Azerbaijan's state-owned oil company. Last year's president, Sultan Al-Jaber, is chief executive of the United Arab Emirates state oil company ADNOC, and that's a company known to be planning the expansion of its gas and oil operations. Well, those appointments understandably have drawn criticism, and they raise the question of just how much oil lobbying is really taking place at this ever more important climate conference. Well, to discuss the issues around COP, the deal that was struck at the conference yesterday on carbon credits, and what the election of Donald Trump might mean for climate change, I'm joined by George Monbiot, who's a journalist and author of Feeding the World Without Devouring the Planet. George, good morning and welcome to the programme.
Good morning, thank you.
You've been very critical, I know, in the past of COP. You've said it's treated like a trade fair, heaving with representatives from planet-trashing industries. Has anything changed this year, given that appointment that has just been made?
Oh, gosh, I'm afraid it hasn't. And, you know, you rightly point out the fact that, you know, it's being chaired by a former oil executive. I suppose you could say that's an improvement on being chaired by a serving oil executive. But this really is the vampires in charge of the blood bank. And already we're seeing the way that lobbying by fossil fuel companies dominates this process. In fact, there was an undercover investigation which showed the COP executive in Azerbaijan actually facilitating a meeting between someone who claimed to be an investor and the state oil company in order to exploit more fossil fuels. The exact opposite of what this meeting is set up to do. And, you know, I've become pretty cynical about this whole process. We've had 28 of these meetings. Two of them have partially succeeded. If we sort of give them a sort of 50% success to each of those two, that means overall we've got a 3.6% success rate over these 28 meetings that have taken place so far. If any other process had a 3.6% success rate, we would abandon it and start again and introduce a better process which is more likely to work.
I mean, what is the alternative? Is that it, that this be abandoned and something else be started in its stead?
Well, the way the COP meetings are set up is on a consensus basis. And this was a response way back to a demand by Saudi Arabia. And what consensus means is that every nation there has veto power. And so nothing can be approved unless everyone agrees to its approval. And that means that you're constantly bringing the decisions down to the lowest common level. And when you've got oil states, of course, what they want is going to be the lowest common level. And so that's what goes. What we need instead is either a voting process, and there are some very clever voting models. For instance, there's one promoted by the De Border Institute, which is based in the Republic of Ireland, looking at how you can have a voting system which, instead of sort of coming down to these yes-no binaries, actually develops far more intelligent and nuanced responses than crude voting can. Alternatively, we do this through creating a series of new global treaties, such as a fossil fuel non-proliferation treaty, a deforestation treaty, etc. But one thing we can be absolutely clear of, this process is going nowhere. The COP process is not only a failure, it is a failure by design.
Yeah, because we had this, it was described as a breakthrough by the COP29 president, who I mentioned earlier, this deal on carbon credits. So wealthier countries offset their carbon by purchasing credits from countries that have cut greenhouse gases above what they promised. Is that a breakthrough or not?
No, I mean, they'll do anything except what needs to be done, which is to curtail the fossil fuel and livestock industries, which are the two biggest drivers of this disaster. And, you know, it doesn't even feature in any of the resolutions of any of the meetings so far. So instead, they use these pathetic substitutes. And it's a bit like sort of pushing the food around in your plate to pretend that you've eaten your meal. You know, we'll move it from this country to that country. And so all this is just a displacement activity. It's just a way of not grasping what needs to be done, fundamentally leaving fossil fuels in the ground.
So who would drive this change then? Who would redesign what COP is? Who would shut out the lobbyists? Who is the most likely, in your view, to take a lead on that?
Well, it's not going to be the United States.
For sure,
I mean,
now.
Fairness, it was, yeah, quite. In fairness, it was never going to be the United States. You know, even Biden, who did some good things, has overseen record expansion of oil and gas and has sort of subtly undermined effective global action. And of course, under Trump, well, there's no hope of that at all. The smaller island nations, some of the frontline states on the climate disaster, they've been pushing for a much better process for many years, but they haven't been heard. I'm somewhat cheered that Keir Starmer is taking all this quite seriously. He's one of only two G7 leaders to be attending the summit. But even here in the UK, we're surrounded by false solutions more than anything else, like this preposterous carbon capture and storage project in which they'll be pouring tens of billions of pounds. So I'm not massively optimistic, as you can probably tell.
We had a long conversation in the programme, on this programme, about the carbon capture project. I mean, Labour seem to be hamstrung by this desire for growth on the one hand and the pursuit of renewables and clean energy on the other. And they're trying to marry the two, but it's very difficult, isn't it?
Well, it is very difficult, particularly when you're susceptible to the lobbying of the fossil fuel industry. And this carbon capture and storage program, it's purely the result of fossil fuel industry lobbying. That's what they wanted. And there's plenty of analysis now showing that it's actually going to increase emissions. So our major ticket, our biggest spending item of all on climate in this country is actually going to increase emissions. How crazy is that?
Mm-hmm. I mean, we heard a lot of talk about how this COP is the finance COP, that one of the problems that they're trying to solve is this one of getting money to poorer, more affected countries. Now, people might have all sorts of motives in doing that, but do you think, despite those motives being questionable, that it is a desirable outcome?
It would be, indeed, if it were to happen. And there's plenty of money. I mean, governments are spending $2.7 trillion a year subsidising fossil fuels. So they're not short of cash to be spending on energy. They just happen to be spending it in all the wrong places. So, you know, this can easily be done. And of course, you know, as you had in that clip of Antonio Guterres right at the beginning saying, you know, it is the rich countries which cause the problem, and it's the poor countries which take most of the pain of it. It is entirely right that we should be helping those poorer countries to mitigate and to adapt. But, you know, the record of financial transfer for climate has been absolutely dire so far. So I'm really not expecting very much from this.
Can I just come back to America? Because you did touch on Joe Biden's record. We know that he promoted investment in renewables, and that did attract investment, particularly in the Rust Belt states, which, of course, economically is desirable. Then you've Donald Trump, who says that climate change is a scam and has used those words, drill, baby, drill. Do you think, though, that he's going to unwind that plan, which has led to investment in the very states that he's trying to keep on side?
Yes, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, how will Trump come down now? Will he support big business, fossil fuel corporations, the oligarchs, or will he support the little guy? Difficult one to decide. I think it's pretty clear that, you know, he's going to do exactly what the fossil fuel industry wants him to do. Biden, as you point out, he was riding both horses. You know, he was simultaneously investing big in renewables, but also investing big in fossil fuel. And, you know, the one thing you have to do is to stop doing the bad stuff if we're going to have any better outcomes at all. But Trump, he's only going to do the bad stuff, and he's going to stop doing the good stuff.
You firmly believe that?
Yes.
You've been writing about something called climate flickering, which I'm interested in hearing more about, because we reported an awful lot on the flooding that happened in Spain, which was so devastating for so many people. Is that climate flickering, George?
It could well be. It's hard to tell. One can only really see it in retrospect, and retrospect is not a place where we want to be. But the fundamental idea here is that Earth systems are complex systems. Complex systems are a very particular thing. They have particular mathematical properties. And one of the aspects of a complex system is that it has tipping points, that it can suddenly collapse from one equilibrium state into another, and that collapse is more or less irreversible. Now, it's impossible to tell exactly where that tipping point is until it's already happened, unfortunately. But one of the clues that it's coming is what systems theorists call flickering. You see a wilder and wilder fluctuation of its outputs. Now, when you look at the climate system, the atmospheric system, from the point of view of complex systems theory, what we are seeing at the moment with these extreme events looks very much like flickering.
Okay, so the flooding in Spain is a definite warning signal to us that this is happening.
The flooding, the fires, the desertification, the melting. I mean, things are happening so fast now. The heating and the heat waves which are being felt. This is at the very extreme end of scientific predictions. And last year it was going way beyond those predictions. So, yeah, this looks proper scary.
Yeah, but, you know, looking now at you know, we've mentioned Donald Trump and what he might do and what he might not do. We have COP with very many world leaders deciding not to go to make what would have been a short address anyway. Keir Starmer went, as we know, and as you have mentioned. Do you still feel that nobody's listening? The people who need to listen are not listening?
I really want to be optimistic. I really want to find the hope. It's not going to come from governments. It's going to come from social movements. It's going to come from huge numbers of people getting together and saying enough is enough. We demand our governments protect us, because after all, that's what they're there for.
George, thank you for your time. Always good to talk to you. That's George Monbiot, who is a journalist and author of many books, including Regenesis, Feeding the World Without Devouring the Planet. Coming up next, we're going to hear about this new stop smoking daily pill. It's being rolled out in England and it could transform smokers' lives here.
Get in touch on WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32.